not your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler for this second hour. What's coming up in just a few minutes will be Dr. Fred Bell. And Charlotte and I interviewed him back in 2007. Unfortunately, Dr. Fred Bell is no longer with us. He died in his hotel room shortly after being interviewed by Jesse Ventura up in Minneapolis area. I'm going to direct you to a couple of, you could say, papers that I wrote a number of about 2 years ago, about a year or so ago. One of them's called The Egyptian Plantation. And what I talked about there was that I go back with a little history about Egypt, and I try to give a little bit of insight into what's going on over there today. And Egypt is unlike you might ever imagine it to be, because it's actually what's happened there is that the army, the armed forces, have taken over and the economy. And they control or dominate between 25 to 40% of the economy at this time. So it's not exactly what it appears to be. You know, before Nasser took over, it was run like a plantation. You know what I mean? Egypt was. And then Nasser gave it an ability, a chance, you could say. When he went and participated with his other military officers and with the military overthrow coup, he began to give the Egyptian people, the common people, a chance. But he set up at the same time a very, very large bureaucracy and a very large government. He was on the socialist side of the political spectrum, see. And all of this uproar and all of this dissension and all of this chaos and disorder over there in Egypt obscures the fact that that Egypt is dominated by the military and especially the army. So, I mean, they divide up all of this money and everything. So everyone is pretty flush and pretty in pretty good condition, economic condition, by the time that they reach the upper ranks and everyone is taken care of in the military over there. When Anwar Sadat struck the peace with the Israelis, he began to create a hatred within his own country of the hardline right, Islam right. And they set out to assassinate him, and they finally did. But what happened when they did achieve this peace with Israel, then the army itself did not have an enemy to marshal against and to organize against. So what they did basically was they reorganized the army, the Egyptian army, into economic endeavors and production and industrial endeavors. And as a result, they built a tremendous business base over there. And so the reason why they have all of these, these uprisings and these protests there in the squares and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden the army is cozying up with the people, and they said that we're here to stand with the people and all that. Well, they're there to stand with the people as long as the people don't deny them their business interests, see. And now they've got all of this money and subsidy from the United States, usually. For an example, let me give you an example of what happened in Egypt a few years back, was that you would think in most countries, you look at the ownership of the central bank as being the real core of the power, national power. But in Egypt, that is not the case. What you have in Egypt is you have this military industrial complex. I guess Eisenhower was not referring to Egypt at the time, but I guess it could be used to describe the Egyptian system, can it? But it's the military, industrial, political system that has evolved. And that system made a $1 billion loan to the central bank when it needed money and liquidity. So in that case, the central bank was proven and on its face not to be the dominant power group, but it was controlled and owned by the military industrial complex that owns 25% to 40% of the Egyptian economy. When you begin to look at it like that, you begin to say, well, what is really going on in this world? And are these military, or are they just, you know, are they just lying and fibbing? Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're not telling us the truth. They don't tell us the truth in this country either. It's a sleight of hand. Now, I'll tell you one of the dynamics that's going on right now in this country is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. And this has a similar, it's a good example to bring it home here as an example in the United States, is that the corporations have grown so large in power and business and money and capital that they're doing an end run around the nation state. And the nation state still has monopolies on, like, through their central banks of money creation, and they usually still dominate the military on a large basis like this country. So corporations are not quite there yet on lethal force like atomic weapons, nor are they there quite, you know, they want to be, but they do control the central banks through their money and might, money power and money might. So that's where they still, you know, have sway over the money system. So what you have is that they still, though, have trouble, the corporations, in asserting their power and dominance with nation-state governments. Now, they're having trouble still with the United States Congress because Congress, the spending bills have to originate in the House, see. So if you have a very stubborn Congress, and particularly the one recently here in the United States, our Congress, U.S. Congress, that elected these so-called teabaggers that they believe in the Constitution. My gosh, forbidden. That should be forbidden on the House of the U.S. House, shouldn't it, to even talk about constitutional issues, because they violate it all the time anyway. But as a result, what we have is that we have a problem that the corporations have with congressional bodies or political bodies or political leaders. Most of them they have in their pocket through money dominance. They fly in and out of Washington and the international capitals in their big jets, corporate jets. They're not Lear jets anymore. That's for small corporations. These guys are flying the big planes, you know. Now, they're worldwide in scope in their operations. And so they have a lot of power and money. Now, where we need to look at this coming month, next month, towards the end, to see the might, the power might of the corporate entities, you need to zero in on World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. There you're going to see and observe, and you need to start watching those videos that are put out live from the different discussions. It's a approximately 7 hour difference between here, 6 to 7 hour difference between here and, I believe it is seven, between here and Switzerland. But go ahead and get up late early in the morning, or stay up late at night, whatever it takes. You need to try to view some of these speeches. I've gleaned from them over the last 4, 5, 6 years some very important insights. And I will be watching again this year and see what they have to say. I got 1 year David Rubenstein saying, well, the Chinese model of capitalism might be the way to go, you know. Are you kidding me? He heads up a Carlyle Group, you know, investments for the Bushes. Now, I'm not going to agree with that. We need to go like the Chinese communist and their concept of capitalism. Are you kidding me? But anyway, so there are insights to be gleaned from these types of groups meeting. Now, you have about 2,500 or more of the largest corporations in the world that go there and fund that. And they have their people there on the ground. It's usually in cold climate there in Davos. There's snow on the ground. And then they give speeches. There's usually about 4 or 5 days, about 4 days, a beginning and an ending, and about 3 to 4 days of speeches continuously all during the day. But they have some good things to say. They are the movers and the shakers in the corporate field. Now, the Bilderberg Group is a little higher level, and it's got elements of corporations there, but it's money. What you have there at the Bilderberg, you've got heads of states. You've got they're not the heads of states because they have to be careful to go to that meeting being a head of state. But their emissaries are usually there in the form of central bankers or intelligence chiefs and things like that. Then there are some kings and queens that show up there also from some of the surrounding countries. So that's who shows up at the Bilderberg meeting. We attended the last one that was held in Copenhagen, Denmark, and we saw far ourselves firsthand what they're all about. And they bring in like the head of NATO, the head of the United States, the troops in Europe, and then they get special privileged briefings. And I'm sure that they're disclosing some things that would be considered private here, or at least not private, more than private, would be to probably secret or top secret information, because there are the movers and the shakers, and so they're going to be provided all of this inside information to manipulate and to dominate. And here's getting back to this bill that was passed this week, this spending bill. It's a one report here from CNSnews.com. It says Boehner's spending deals have increased the debt $3.8 trillion in 3.8 years. So, Republican House is going in there and it's going to cut back on spending. You know what I mean? That's quite an insight there to get control of the country. Go in there and they gave casino special deals, and they gave the banks special deals on derivatives what they did. It looked like on the derivative market, and I touched on this at the beginning of the first hour, is in the derivative market, they made that the derivative still to fall under the insurance, bailouts that could occur if they went under. So if they have problems and they want to fold that corporation, then they can maneuver those. They're already under an insurance, the derivatives, which they weren't before. But this new law that was passed, they stuck that in there for the bankers to protect them against horrendous derivative losses that are coming. Now there's a recent federal case. That's up on our site now, out of Chicago area, and it's a special lawsuit that's been filed recently by some speculators and market investors in the Chicago commodities markets. And what they're saying and alleging is that there are wash transactions occurring on the highest levels of the commodities brokerage houses, system in the Chicago area. And a wash account basically is an account that both the buyer and seller are the same person. Now, supposedly, recently, some of the brokerage, clearinghouses have changed their rules slightly to allow a wash transaction. My feeling and opinion, and this is just my own, you're not going to hear it from hardly anyone else, I believe that the wash transactions are being used to support some kind of fallacious value of which the derivatives that are being traded supposedly in the sham deal. And it's a sham deal. When you have the buyer and seller the same, are you kidding me? That's not an arm's length market transaction by any means. So what they're creating is they're creating sham transactions to support a mark on market, what they call, they had to go to a mark on market type of accounting on the derivatives, and from a mark on model, mark to model, to they had to move from a mark to model to a mark to market. And the mark to model was dreaming up any kind of an algorithm possible to try to project some kind of a future value for your derivatives that could or might not be related to any true reality. The mark to market is more realistic, but evidently they had to go to these wash transactions because they weren't experiencing any sales and market demand for something worthless, see. So that's where the derivatives are today. They're holding them on the books, trying to buoyant them as being worth something, but they're worthless. And sooner or later, they're going to have to reconcile their books. This is why they slipped into this spending bill just recently in the last few days, an ability to take out and use deposit insurance, to cover, in my opinion, those derivative losses. And Pelosi this time raised holy hell about it and couldn't get anybody, even the Republican contingency to strike it out. And they say it's there, but also it gave spending for Michelle Obama's lunchroom program that was funded in there. And I believe that also the funding through February on the immigration stuff, that issues and so forth, that Obama is still pursuing, I believe that was also funded. So we have a Congress that is spending wildly. I mean, is there any realization that, that the spending will end? Okay, now, the other article I want to refer you to, and it's up on our site also, is about Turkey, and it's called Turkey Intrigue. And what I finally figured out over there in Turkey is that there are 300 Masonic lodges over there. So Turkey is a Masonic-based country, but it does have the dominant religion is Islam. But what happened in Turkey is that you had a revolt in the 20s, and as a result, the Freemasons took over Turkey. But what they did was secularize the government and made it non-religious. So in Turkey today, you're not going to be able to use a religious approach in the political ongoings, you could say. You're not going to get anywhere because you've got Masons that dominate, and they've had all kinds of deals with Gladio over there and so forth, all kinds of intrigue, and it's just a mess. Recently, Erdogan has been elevated to president, and the article, if you read my article that's up on there now, up on the web, you'll see that the president of Turkey actually has more power from appointments and so forth than the prime minister does. And so that's quite an insight there to read just all the powers that the president of Turkey has to appoint people. And it's like university heads, and there's a great bureaucracy there, bureaucratic overheads and so forth. So, and a very strong military, and it's a big country. So you got the military dealing with the Pentagon, making all kinds of special deals because of the Masonic connections. And then you've got also, you've got this Islam, but it's separated out from the government. So you're not going to have Islamic. Well, Erdogan tried to bring in the Islam religion as much as anyone possibly could have, and he couldn't in the end get anywhere because the good old boy network just sort of closed ranks on him and wouldn't allow him to do much, you know. So as a result, that's the insight into Turkey. And go ahead and read that also. But Palin is saying, she's kicking about this from Alaska up there. She's she's complaining about this bill. You know, also, Sarah Palin, I saw her in the 2008 convention being nominated and elected vice presidential nominee for the Republican Party when I was up there. But, of course, in Jeb Bush, boy, he's leaning for a yes, maybe they're saying. And it looks like to me that we've got two choices, but I don't call either one of them a choice. We've got Hillary or Jeb, right? And they're the best of friends. Oh, he's like a brother to me and all that. Are you kidding me? They're calling each other like brother-in-laws and this-in-law and that-in-law. And boy, they just love each other, don't they? I mean, you know, and they're trying to put a better, a more compassionate, gentle, kind face on Hillary. But it's hard to do with Benghazi, and it wouldn't have made any difference. Remember that little tyrant, outburst that she did in front of the congressional committee? So, I mean, she's not a nice person. And Jeb Bush is coming from one of the most powerful families in the country, and they brought us 9/11. So I don't want any Bushes in office whatsoever. So I'm not for them either. But it looks like that the maneuvering behind the scenes is Jeb from the Republican right and Hillary from the Democratic left is what we're going to end up with as far as the two nominees coming out of the conventions. But I don't know how they're going to do it or if they're ever going to make it for sure. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. And Fred Bell is quite an insightful person. God bless his soul, but he was a nice person and did a lot of good in the health business also, in the health field, in the alternative health field. So anyway, I just want to thank everyone for listening out there, and God bless each and every one of you.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler.
And I'm Charlotte Littlefield.
And Charlotte's going to give us an announcement or two.
This is our second hour. George, we had a little bit of difficulties at the top of the other one, and we had a Dr. Michael Andrig on.
Andrig, yeah.
Andrig.
Yeah.
It's a difficult name to get around. It's A-N-D-R-E-G-G. At any rate, if you go to our website, thesecrettruth.com, you'll see a link to the good doctor's book that we discussed for a couple of segments. Unfortunately, he was supposed to be with us the whole hour, but due to our technical difficulties, he wasn't able to join us the whole time.
He has a book called On the Causes of War.
Yes.
Okay, and it's something to go. How do you get to that on our site?
Okay, you go to thesecrettruth.com. It's in the right column. Right now it happens to be at the top because as our guests come through, they slide down. But it's the first link on the top right, and it's his name, Dr. Michael Andrig, and a fascinating book. You know, George, one of the things that he talks about in the book are, you know, the causes of war, and they're not simple. And this is a very big book, and they're, you know, broken down into chapters. One of the good chapters that we wanted to get into, and we didn't have enough time to, had to do with, it's called Spies, Cults, and Secret Power Systems. And basically, he lays out some really well-researched, excellent information pertaining to how the secret society systems are kind of like cults, the similarities.
Yeah, that's very good. Our next guest is Dr. Fred Bell.
I mean, we can ask him about this.
He was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and he has connections back to Alexander Graham Bell. He's a very eclectic, a very ingenious person. And Dr. Bell, how are you tonight?
Great, George. How are you and Charlotte doing
okay,
tonight?
Okay, boy, we're glad to have you back, Dr. Bell.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back with you guys, you good old boys and girls down there.
Right? Oh, can you hear our twang?
It's twang.
Oh, I love it. Well, I got some twang, too, baby. I
can
do it.
Dr. Fred.
I think I can get that, you know, pull that accent back here. You know, reckon I can do that right now.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you reckon, you know, did you happen, let me fill you in.
Oh, yeah. What was your question?
That, the
I heard
book
you
of our previous. Yeah, the book of our previous guest. It's called On the Causes of War,
right.
And it's Dr. Michael Enrig. And the book was actually published in the late 90s. Received a National Peace Writing Award in 1999. It's been translated into Italian, or I should say Italian, or Italian. At any rate.
Depends on what part of the country you're from.
Yeah,
we're South Austin boys here.
I highly recommend this book. And he's got he's got the beginning of the book, you know, it's like an overview, talks about, you know, war and peace and da-da-da. Then it goes into the causes of war. And he's got a whole chapter dedicated to spies, cults, and the secret power systems.
Right.
And I was, basically, he equates, the secret, the Mace, the Masonic Lodges, the Privy of Zion, what are all the good ones? At any rate, he equates them to cults.
Right.
And a very fascinating chapter. You got a chance to read it. What I was wondering, I thought you might have an opinion about that.
Yeah, how long do you have? You got a couple hours, or you want the short version?
We need the short version, because we only got an hour.
Okay, I was initiated into the Masonic Lodges when I was very, very young. Obviously, that was even before I was in the Air Force. So I learned the code of, you know, how it works. And there are different paths. First of all, when we rotate around the Pleiades, it's every 26,827.5 years. And what happens is consciousness, we have 12,000 years of darkness, and we have 12,000 years of light. And so we go from the dark period, the Renaissance, you know, the Inquisition, all that sort of stuff, into the period, the age of light where we're coming now. The vibratory frequency of our atomic cell structures in our body resonate at different rates depending on where we are going around the Pleiades. That's our central spiritual sun that we rotate around our entire solar system. So what the lodges do is they monitor that rotational period, and they keep a certain amount of consciousness in science, especially, away from the masses. And this is regulated through different secret orders, okay? When the time comes, then what happens is the information is start to let out where people can understand it, because this knowledge would become destructive to the societies if they were to have it prematurely. The lodges are not the Masons. The Freemasons are just the outer skin of the much deeper animal. You get further down into the skin of it, you get out into what's called the White Brotherhood. The White Brotherhood of Light easily is traced back to the resurrection of Christ in the whole his whole trial, the whole thing that happened in the resurrection, everything that followed that. If you go back further into the source of the knowledge of these lodges, you come up to what's called the Blue Lodge or the Ray Path from Sirius. And so that is an extraterrestrial influence that is Masonically traced into the White Brotherhood, which is Masonically traced into the Masonic Lodge, which is, you know, spread out through and put great knowledge of at the one place called the Bohemian Club that Alex Jones talks a lot about. And a friend of mine used to work up there. He's retired now, but he was one of the people that was in there all the time. Matter of fact, I almost went up there to lecture for them at one point. So there's a whole lot of information here and a whole lot of things that go on when the time is right. Unfortunately, there's a dark side to these lodges. The dark side of these lodges is where these people become super wealthy. And this is like the Habsburg family and these huge families, you know, Farben, all of them, over the last 2,000 years. Huge, huge, old, what they call old money families. And so the people have a tendency to step off the enlightened side of the Masonic path and go to the dark side of the path. And so you end up with all this secret government cover-up, all these horrible weapon systems that we've developed, and all this, you know, incorrigible stuff that we're seeing today with the loss of habeas corpus and all that. So that's kind of the whole thing in a nutshell, if you want me to go further into it.
It's a lot of money-driven dynamics. Is that part of it, the money?
Well, first of all, these people don't look at money as money. The whole system is set up on energy. There's seven levels or seven courses of energy. First level of energy is the will. That's when you get up in the morning. It's your drive, your ambition, whether it's, you know, it's for yourself or whether it's for the service to mankind. So that's the big separating factor, whether it's aspiration or desperation or aspiration and inspiration. You know, there's a dividing line. The second energy is the love energy that they look at. It's the blue energy. Each one has a color, and it's a blue energy, and it works in the heart chakra, and it's called the Christ energy of the love, you know, healing, blah, blah. The third energy is what's called the Holy Ghost. The Holy Ghost works through the thyroid gland in the body, and it's a green ray. It's an emerald green color, and that's the color that money is on. So when you learn to manipulate the Holy Ghost energy, you know, which is huge in some religions, as a matter of fact, it's just, it's, you know, the Holy Ghost is the one to be feared. The Holy Ghost is the one to have the power. Well, it's all backed by money. And so then you go into the fourth ray of energy, which is the solar plexus, which is the yellow. It's yellow. It's the stomach, and that's compassion. And the fifth ray is what's called the ray of concrete science and knowledge, and that's where knowledge and science is integrated with third aspect, money and power, to make great, you know, temples be built, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, the last frequency is ceremonial magic. And what happens is over the years, over the millennium, over the years, different masters are incarnated here, representing different aspects of the different rays. For example, when Jesus came, he was represented by the second ray. And when Buddha came, he, you know, which was 600 years previous to him, he was represented by yellow ray, compassion.
We're gonna, Doctor, we have to break it off here just a second. We'll be right back in a few minutes.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm Charlotte Littlefield with...
This George Butler. Welcome back.
We have Dr. Fred Bell with us this evening. Fred.
Yeah.
Okay. I was writing down the seven courses, if you will.
Yeah, seven rays.
Seven rays of energy. We started with will, which was the difference between desperation and aspiration.
Yeah.
The
Actually, it's really you know, service to mankind or service to yourself.
Okay. What I was going
to
get to was that
lighter, you know, in your life, in your karma and everything.
Okay.
You know, that's the first one.
Well, let me get to the point. You're missing one.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay. So we had will, then we had blue love.
Blue is love, the heart chakra.
Heart chakra. Then we had Holy Ghost, thyroid green.
A gland green. Right.
Okay, solar plex, yellow, compassion.
Right.
Five was concrete science.
Orange, yeah, it's orange. I forgot.
Orange, okay.
Color, yeah.
And then I skipped six.
Six is the reproduction center in the body, and it's called the ray of ceremonial magic. I mean, devotion. It's a ray of devotion. You know, the people that are devotees, like the Krishna people and, you know, people that follow religions, they're working often on the sixth path.
Does it have a color?
Yeah, it's a dark blue. It's the lapis. Lapis is the actual color of it. And that's what the Egyptians, when they used the lapis lazuli stone, that's what it represented. And, of course, the seventh ceremonial magic, Count Saint Germain, he's the guy that's in Madame Dalloir's diaries. He's depicted in the Louvre, and he lived over 200-some-odd years in France and around Europe about 150 years ago.
Okay. And is there a color for number seven?
Yeah, violet.
Violet. Oh, of course. I knew that one.
Yeah, and these all work through the hydrogen. The way they are assimilated into the human body is the consciousness of the body is made up of four basic atoms, oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon, okay? The oxygen is the animation. It animates, allows the soul to animate through the action of blood, so you can be in your body while you're alive. You cut off the oxygen, and boom, and your brain dies, and you're out of your body. Nitrogen is it makes explosives. It also makes protein, so you can make bodies or bombs or whatever. So the nitrogen is the filament of the protein and cell structure of form. Then the hydrogen atom, the fourth atom, is the animation, and that's the one that's affected by vibration. You know, to, for example, if two people are out, like, say, at Chicago, and they were sitting at, say, C-17 gate the other day when that UFO was, the saucer was seen there. Some people might not have seen it because their frequency wasn't, their bandwidth of their eye, their vision wasn't there. Or some people you might hear, or some people say they have a deaf ear, they can't hear because their bandwidth is gone. Other people can hear, you know, a sink dripping in the neighbor's sink, you know, across the street.
Right.
So it all has to do with bandwidth. And so all this bandwidth stuff is done by fasting and done by cleansing the body and doing everything you can to get the hydrogen in them to get maximum performance. And that's what that nuclear receptor I was telling you about. When you get the book, you'll learn a lot more about it. And these are the things that I've worked on for the last 32 years in my, you know, outgoing work in making the body a better place for the, you know, better temple for the higher Holy Spirit that comes into all of us, you know, which we all are anyway.
Okay, now how does this tie to the secret societies?
Well, the secret societies, know all this as a ritual, okay? They have very powerful meditations. They have very powerful ceremonies to amplify these different things. For example, the ceremonial magic is pretty much, as Count Saint Germain's name is pretty much known in any temple anywhere in the world that has anything to do with metaphysics or the Masons, okay? That name is well known, okay? Other masters, Buddha, for example, Guantanamo Buddha, you know, Siddhartha, you know, he was a prince in China, in Thailand, and all of those countries over there. He's well known. He's got, there are Buddhist temples all over the world that are very aware of him. They're not so centered on the other aspects because they center on, you know, the fourth ray, the energy of the of yellow. And of course, the Christ energies, we know about that. That's all over the place. So, you know, in the Christian faith, Muhammad was a first ray master, a master of the will, and he's represented by the Islamic religion, Muhammad. And Muhammad is always depicted as being a first ray master carrying a huge sword. Now, this is way beyond this predates the Quran thousands of years, the doctrine of Muhammad. Muhammad was also, he's transmitted in the Buddhist as Shiva, the destroyer. So out of his destruction comes new life. But a lot of the terrorists and that misinterpret that and they take it literally. It doesn't mean it's literally go around cutting people's heads off with swords, but you've seen it, it happened a few, you know, last year and in some of these horrible executions. So the rituals, the magic, the belief, the brotherhood, they exist anywhere from, you know, Christians to jihadists to holy shrines to, you know, Masons. They're all part of it. They're all part of it. A lot of them are minions in it and they're not aware of their part. But believe me, the masters that lead this, lead these movements, they're totally aware of all of it, you know, all of it. And that's where they get their power. I also wanted to say, I heard you say you had your station down. Well, over at BBS Radio tonight, I was supposed to do an hour show, and I did most of it on the internet because we were only on for 20 minutes, and we got hit with something and brought us down. That station went down over there. The only thing, what I did do, though, is I got everybody over here listening to this show.
Fabulous. We welcome the listeners.
Thank you, Doctor.
I brought you a bunch of listeners, and if you click on the front page of Paradigm.com or even on which is on your link on TruthSeekers.com. There's a camera on there, and I've got the camera turned on right now, so I'm live on TV.
Oh, that's great.
That wavelength as we speak. So a lot of your listeners, I think it's kind of full right now. It gets full, and then you can't get on, but you might try it.
Have you ever heard of Arnold Kieserling?
No.
He was a European philosopher, a father of the New Age movement in Europe,
right,
out of Vienna. He
came
up with what he calls a primal scale.
Yeah,
it's a new tonal scale.
Is that he's new over there?
He's dead now, but he was a follower of Georges Jourdip.
Okay, I know who that is. Yeah,
and yeah, his father actually was a follower of Georges Jourdip in France, I believe.
Jourdip, yeah.
Yeah, and then Arnold, you know, he
worked in the Order of Saint Germain, ceremonial magic, just so you know.
But anyway, Arnold came up and discovered what he called the primal scale, and it is a new tonal scale. And I thought that was sort of interesting because he related it directly to this chakra system.
Yeah, well, we do that. When I play concerts, I play concerts all over Europe. I've got 5 albums out. I'm also a solo musician, keyboard, and woodwind player.
Golly, Doctor.
You got a website for that?
Though I don't know if the music, I got a, here's a new website, and I'm going to have this over there. It's called Rays of Truth. Okay, RaysOfTruth.tv. RaysOfTruth.tv. I'll have my music over there momentarily.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to get to is that I have these synthesizers. There's 2 things I want to tell you about. One is I started in art and music. I started playing music in the 6th grade. I played clarinet all my life, you know, 50-some years now.
Okay.
But anyway, and keyboards. And I toured with some of the bigger bands in the world. And anyway, Yasi came to my life. She's a friend of mine, and she taught me how to paint. And there's a painting that changes faces on the wall over there. And then she also taught me about music, resonance structure of music. And when Roland came out with a synthesizer called a Roland D50, it was called a particular type of synthesis that was new. I was able to create sounds that caused levitation. Things could rise off the ground and float.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I got it all documented, and the Tibetans were doing that for a long time. They were raising rocks.
Okay, we got to take another break, but we'll be back in a few minutes, Doctor. Hey, welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler.
I'm Charlotte Littlefield.
Dr. Bale there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I wanted you to clarify. I had one question there about the Great White Brotherhood. Is that an etheric group or what?
Oh, it's absolutely not an etheric group. It's a very physical group that's very much alive and well, and they live up in the mountains up in Tibet.
I see.
In one area called the Bandarian Mountains. And up in the high Himalayas, and it's pretty hard. If you get too close to some of their places where they are, you know, established mostly in caves, a Tibetan form comes out called a Yeti, and some people call them the abdominal snowman.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, that's what they're for. They're like they're guards, and they're friendly, and they like to swap things out. They'll come into your tent at night and take something away and give you something in return, and they'll completely distract you from getting anywhere close to these, and so they're different. Yeah, they're very, very much alive, and the masters from the Brotherhood come down here in our society, and they work among us as normal people. And you'll see them sometimes being an ambassador to the UN or some high. You'll see them oftentimes in high positions. They worked a lot in England at the turn of the century and before that. Madame Blavatsky was one person that came in contact with a master named K.H. Kahuhumi, who was working with the Queen of England at the turn of the century. So, I mean, they're around and they're identifiable, and they have different departments that they work in. You just have to have the eyes to see them, they're recognized by their work. They're not coming around saying, "I am a master."
Okay,
you only recognize them by their actions.
We just got a flash message on a question on, I believe it says, "Ask Dr. Bell about chemtrails."
Okay, well, that's bromine. You know, that's part of the what I call the Hay Kissinger depopulation policy.
What is happening there anyway?
Well, you know, the chemtrails started back at the Mig Alley when the old F-86s would flame out on JP-1 fuel. They started adding chemicals because there were bacteria that would grow in the fuel tanks of liquid kerosene at 50 below zero temperatures, and they'd kill the engine. So these poisons, they started putting in there. They decided later on, when they decided to eradicate part of humanity and make more business for the drug companies, they started putting bromine in them. The first thing they did was the big malathion, you know, the medfly. They created the medfly and sprayed everybody there, and they sprayed all over the country and tried to spray all over the world until we put a stop to that through the National Health Federation. And then now the bromine thing is what's going in these JP-8 or JP-9 fuel, what they're using now. And so bromine is being sprayed into the gas and you know, the jet fuels. And what it does is it destroys your central nervous system and creates huge amounts of depression. So when you have all this depression going on, it robs your body of nutrients that produce different hormones, primarily one called vasopressin. It suppresses that in the body. And so as a result of that, these drug companies can make a lot of money and people gradually die. It also is used, malathion was researched in Japan in the early 50s for birth control because they had a birth control problem, you know.
Okay.
Remember, Japan's early, before World War II, they didn't even want to, for a long time, outside trade. I mean, it was in the mid-1800s when Japan started doing outside trade, but they wanted to regulate themselves, and so they were very much into birth control measures.
Okay.
And then, of course, they used it in Vietnam, Agent Orange, but it didn't work down there. The Vietnamese women actually produced more kids.
Right. I got to interrupt.
So that's a long story, but that's what it's all about. It's all about, you know, controlling the populace and the attitude.
Right. And here's where I got to jump in. And George, you're please jump in also. See, when I think of secret societies and I think of bad things, I think of people, you know, trying to do population control, literally out there, you know, trimming the herd, if you will. Right. And
that,
to me, that's what a secret society is. That's, you know, that those are the bad guys.
Yeah, those are. Those types of things that guys that do that are. And that's the majority of what goes on.
But Okay, but we started the conversation talking about occultism and secret societies.
Right.
And, you know, you started down the troll telling me about the, you know, the chakras and everything. Now I'm a little confused.
Okay.
Because the Tibetans are doing this?
Well, the Tibetans, you know, you understand how the Dalai Lama, how he works and what his powers were and all of that. I mean, I don't know how much.
Maybe I don't know enough to understand that. I thought that the secret societies were the bad.
Well, no. There's good and evil and evil and good. It works. It's just not laid out in black and white. Okay? Not how it works. The dark side of the secret societies is very manipulative. The good side of secret societies is very positive. In most of the societies that Americans are aware of, okay, are bad. They do bad things to people, okay? Not all of them are that way, okay? The Masons, there's a lot of great Masons, and there's a lot of bad Masons. You know, I mean, Washington, D.C. is laid out like the Star of David if you look at the street. Whether you consider that to be good or bad, I don't know. But when you start looking at the Federal Reserve Bank and how people that are members of these different lodges try to control this country and just decided to take over financially with when they created the Federal Reserve back in the 30s or early 20s. From that point on, it's an evil thing. Now, of course, we hear about the Mark of the Beast and all that stuff that even your own ads talk about. But the bottom line is, in the end, as history has shown, these bad societies will all fail. They're already going upside down now as we speak. They won't be functioning that much longer. They make a tremendous effort, you know, to bring about bad and to make people think that all societies are bad. That's part of how they work.
Well, who's doing the chemtrail poisoning?
Well, the chemtrail poisoning is done through the fuel companies. Okay, the people that manufacture the fuel. The jet airliners are not flying around zigzagging doing any purposeful thing. It's just in the fuel. It's all part of the system. If you look at who owns the fuel companies, the Rockefellers, if you look at back to World War II, who financed Hitler, the Rockefellers, and Standard Oil, and you look at Zapata Oil right now, George Bush Sr., who has 69 super tankers that are carrying out a $500 million load twice a day with Iraqi oil and depositing it down there in those Texas oil wells, redepositing it there. I mean, there's where your crookedness comes in. They want to keep the war in Iraq going, to keep, you know, eating away our constitutional freedoms because it's all about oil.
Well, these chemtrails, though, I've seen them over Austin sometimes. It looks like some kind of a special project to me.
Purposeful.
Well, and
I saw them in Ireland doing the same thing, and I saw them in London.
Yeah,
over London doing the same thing there too.
If you look at
in August,
are you aware when a jet airliner comes in, they come in heavy, they just dump the fuel over you?
I mean, yes, but what I'm saying, what we're seeing, and I've been watching this for at least 5 or 6 years, it looks like a program of some kind to me.
Well, it does look like a program because the way the heart regulates the, you know, for a long time we've been controlling the wind currents up there. Okay.
Okay.
When you start controlling the wind currents up there, and I'm covering this in my newest book, the Inside Track.
We had Dr. Baggage on last week.
Yeah, what did he say?
He lives up there and he knows a lot about HAARP.
Yeah, well, that HAARP's not all of it.
Okay.
We had some stuff we did over Los Alamos that I'm very aware of before HAARP ever started, and that's where we put a billion watt laser beam, in the far infrared that you couldn't see with your naked eye. Up over Los Alamos and created a thermonuclear heat band the size of a large fireball, which then upset the trade wind. And so when you start playing around with HAARP now, which is much more, you know, like hundreds of millions of degrees, it completely set the trade winds off. When you start playing, you add HAARP to that with this antenna, you can program the HAARP grid to make all kinds of air currents, what we call ionic air currents, appear. You can make a giant butterfly out of contrails if you want to. You can make any shape you want. So when you start seeing the patterns in that, these are the patterns of distribution. But that the jets aren't flying in those patterns. The jets go fly straight, but then they take the stuff that comes out of the back of the engine and they twist it around and move it around.
It looks like it's all working together to me. It looks like a really contrived, intentional thing to me. We're going to be leaving here in a second.
Planes. You don't see the planes flying all these times. I know what you're talking about.
I've seen them do horseshoes one inside the other, Doctor. I've seen them actually do intentional things. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. Okay, thank you.
Probably down the road more than most people, having had worked at NASA and other places where we actually did some of this research, you know.
Right.
Well, you know, you described this weather modification. Is that what's going on? Why are they doing that?
That's the greenhouse effect, you know, because when you increase the density of the atmosphere and you start pushing the oxygen out, you know, people, I don't know out where you guys are, but out here we can't even use our turn signals anymore. You have to be psychic now when you drive because there's too much to remember for most people. The attention span is shorter than that of a gnat. And as a result of the greenhouse effect, what happens is you have extremes. You have very hot, very cold. And we have huge amount of melting. If you ever fly from like California over to Germany, over Russia, there used to be 10 years ago when I'd fly over, there's huge ice flows. 30% of it's all melted now. So that's put up, released a lot more water on the surface of the planet, which increases some of the atmospheric pressure, which also, because oxygen is trapped in the water. So, but the bottom line is we're using up more oxygen. We have less oxygen per cubic centimeter than we did, say, 50 years ago, and a heck of a lot more carbon monoxide, which makes it more dense. So what you end up is you get starting getting shear effects. If you remember a few years ago, when that started to happen, you heard about all these jets crashing because wind shear was a big thing. Now we've adapted to that in aircraft, and now we're going to have to adapt to this. Like, for example, I don't know, I think you're probably north of it, but I know down in Missouri and in the southern part of Texas, in the northern part, rather, there's some big ice storms, and there's been power outages. And this is just the beginning.
Yeah,
Last
week we had an ice storm here, and in I think Oklahoma they've had really bad storms in there in North Texas.
Yeah, well, my friend down, I have a scientist that I work with in Springfield, Missouri, and he had to go get a generator and hook it up to the power takeoff on his tractor to keep his house running with electricity. They didn't have any for about 2 weeks, so they couldn't have water or anything because their well ran on electric pumps. So there's a lot of hardships going on. People don't realize this, and of course, what does George Bush say? Well, he's not even sure if there is such a thing as global warming. Whereas Al Gore might get a, an Academy Award for his movie. So you can see how some of these people really are trying to make us think we're stupid when they're stupid. But I think people are starting to wake up to it now. You know, this is what one of my big things with this whole thing with the greenhouse effect was to put hemp plants back up and start using ethanol. Hemp plants produce 4 times more oxygen than a tree and grow 5 times faster. And if we had about 30 to 40 million acres, which isn't that much, it's a lot, of hemp trees growing like we used to have, which, remember, hemp oil ran this country at the turn of the century, automobiles, everything. Henry Ford, who my dad worked for, ran all his cars on ethanol, the company cars on ethanol.
Yes. And it was hemp, wasn't it?
Yeah, hemp. Henry Ford had 40 acres of trees. But the government came along when this conspiracy to do the fossil fuel thing and in fact to set the Federal Reserve Board up, well, hemp became illegal.
Well, the forest owners, the people that own the wood, right?
Yeah.
So that took over.
Our Constitution's written on hemp. You know, the rope on the old sailing ships, like HMS Victory, a 400-year-old ship sitting in dry dock in Portsmouth right now, has ropes on it, 200 years old, that still work, made out of hemp. They'll never go bad. They're immune to the sea.
Well, isn't that one of the strongest cords you can weave is hemp?
Yeah.
Isn't it strong, as strong as steel?
Well, I take it back. We have a thing called nanotechnology, and we do it with graphite now. So that's something new. But up until that came along, yes, hemp was the strongest thing.
Well, the common man, and technically, could still use hemp.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you can make clothes out of it. They don't wear out. You know, you take a cotton T-shirt and wash it 50 times, it crumbles, you know. A hemp T-shirt would never crumble.
This nanotechnology, are you into that at all?
Oh, yeah.
Where are we headed there? Are we headed to manipulating the population into some kind of an early medical death or what?
Good question. It's possible. The nanotechnology can, Bucky Fuller, they think it's called buckyballs are these little octahedron-shaped carbon fiber devices that can be made into micro machines that can go inside your body, little tiny cameras that can go inside of a blood cell, photograph. They can also inject any chemical in there they want. That's the downside of it. The upside of it is you can make a rope the size of a thread, and you can pull the Titanic out of the bottom of the ocean with it. So it's a very durable material. And we're also getting into understanding how the human cellular structure works. There's a lot of little nano pumps inside the human red blood cell. There's a lot of studies on that. There's a lot of, it's coming on to be a very interesting area of expertise. And I'll guarantee you one thing, listening devices, cameras can be on the size, on a head of a pin, a video camera.
Can they fly little flies around and things like that?
Yeah, it's real interesting. Yeah.
Wow. Hey, gentlemen, can I totally take us in a new direction for a minute?
Yeah, somewhere else.
For a minute. I had a question. Going back to what you were talking about earlier about the chakras and everything.
Yeah.
The seven courses of energy. This is all very new to me, although individually I'm kind of aware of each, concept, if you will.
Right. But, it's all in your own interpretation. Don't look at mine as the absolute gift, because it's not.
Okay. Well, at any rate, my question to you would be, you said that in the white brotherhood or whatever is not, not white men. It's the white is symbolic of something else.
Well,
and they're not
the white is the white light. See, the seven colors make the white light. That's what it's symbolic of.
Okay.
A rainbow. Look at it as a rainbow, and it's a lot friendlier.
Right.
They look at it. Yeah.
So, and these masters, if you will, I guess that's what Avatar or something, right?
Avatar is certain masters like Paramahansa Yogananda was considered an avatar. These were people that did some really strange things that really defied, logic. I don't know if you, when he did, when Paramahansa Yogananda left his body, he did it out here at Forest Lawn in 1952, March 18th, and he had a big group of people assemble there, and he was the first guy to be received by Calvin Coolidge as our president in 1927 when he came over here as a yogi mystic. In his audience, he had Goodwin Knight, who was the lieutenant governor. He had Vinay Arsen, who was the ambassador to America from India, and he had 800 other people there, and he left his body permanently. He gave a farewell speech, and he left his body permanently. Then they put him in a crypt, and his body maintained perfect temperature for 30 days, and then, of course, it disintegrated like a normal body would. So avatars do funny things that normal people can't do because they have different disciplines. And then they try to share that with those that are understanding.
Well, here's my question.
The credibility of the government and leaders and everything else.
Well, right. Well,
one
some of
incident,
this,
there's 100 others.
Right, right. Well, some of this has slipped through the popular culture. I am an American child born on the public television, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I've seen, snippets of this stuff here and there. But my question is this. When they're meditating, when they supposedly go up a level or whatever, are there other people there?
Well, that's an interesting question. There are other beings that run on a higher vibratory frequency than we do. They're more what we call etheric. Okay, these do exist.
Well, that would lead George his question when he asked if these people were etheric.
Yeah, etheric means that if you were to become like, some people on this planet don't only breathe air. They don't even drink water anymore. That's a breatharian. You don't have to go there to get to that state, but that's more of an etheric person. And so they are not as dense. They don't have a dense bone structure, cellular structure. They're still very real. They're very human. They're very much here. They'll die just like anybody else. But they're not very susceptible to a lot of the ailments that humans are susceptible to because their vibratory frequencies are quite high, and these people are few and far between, I might add. So this does exist. It is a path to follow if that's what you want to do.
So it's not the only path.
No, it's not the only. It's like this with Buddha. Buddha, this is a joke, but it's true. Buddha is sitting by the Ganges River back when he was Buddha. And one of his followers came up to him and said, "Master, look what I can do." And Buddha says, "Pray tell, what is that?" So he walks out on the Ganges River. It's kind of like Jesus. He walks on the water. When he comes back, Buddha says to him, "That was amazing. How long did that take you?" And the guy said, "About 10 years. And he says, "Well, his comment was, I'll take a dime, the equivalent of a dime, and I'll go pay the ferry and cross the river that way, rather than spend 10 years of my life to walk on water." So it depends on the perspective,
Right.
That's the way I look at it. If that's your goal, to become etheric, God bless you and do it,
So it's not required?
No, nothing is required. All I think is required is that you just accept each day as it comes. Each day, to me, is a new world, and you accept the good, the ups and downs, and whatever that day brings, and at the end of the day, learn from it and start tomorrow fresh, and don't carry any baggage over to the next day.
We believe in forgiveness.
Yeah, well, that's the key right there.
To awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. Real wisdom is really understanding it, isn't it?
Yeah, and then forgiving.
But it takes a lot of patience with people, doesn't it?
Yeah, we call that compassion. Patience, that to me is a tool of compassion, you know. To forgive somebody that's done you or your family some harm is darn hard to do.
We're getting ready to sign off. Doctor, thank you for the evening. It's been a very interesting evening. Thank you.